Okay, and do a countdown back in.
I will make it back into your arms. I can be your hero. I will be the one until the end. I will never leave you. I can't find a way into your heart. I can't be your hero. I will never fall asleep again. I will be your hero. I will rescue you and start anew. Ignite the lands, I will never leave you. Just hold tight, you know it feels so right. I can be your hero. I will never fall asleep again. I know I'll go far.
Again, everybody, and this is Richard with Comic Pop Library. We're continuing the visit with Joe Field with Flying Colors Comics. He's the founder of Free Comic Book Day, and we're going to continue on with some of the general questions I had with just visiting in general with the comic book industry. And we appreciate you extending the time, Joe. Thank you very much.
I've got a question for him. With the popularity of the show Arrow, have you seen an increase in like the Green Arrow comics and comics like that? And does that affect like shows like that, do you see an effect on the comic book industry with that?
There are some people who will come in and want more of the material. The thing about Arrow, though, is it's not quite a strict analog from TV to the comics. There are a lot of differences in how they've set up the character and the setting. So what we just let people know is here's the source material, and you're going to recognize some of the things through this, but what you're going to get is a separate and different experience reading the comics than you will passively watching the TV show. And that's kind of the way it is for any of these media things, whether it's TV or movies or whatever. There's a little bit of a disconnect, in all honesty, between people who like to watch and people who like to read.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, reading is very much, sounds like a weird word to use, but follow me. Reading is an intimate experience. It's something you have to do very personally. Reading comics especially, because what we're doing is we're filling in the gaps between the panels. We're hearing the voices of the characters in our heads, what they sound like, what inflections they're doing. We are the directors. We control the speed of how fast the action is going. There's a lot that the readers put into the experience of reading comics. But when you're watching a TV show or a movie, you are very passive. It is about you experiencing just what's on the screen, and that's it. So the comics reading experience is so much richer because there's so much more involved with it.
Have you had to teach anybody how to read comic books?
Yeah. I work with a lot of teachers, and comics are a great way to get people excited about reading. Yeah.
Because I know one of the, and I've mentioned this in some other podcasts, but one of the kids, when I was in the school system, they couldn't get the gist of the comic book. And I asked her what she was doing, and she was just reading the words. She wasn't right. Reading the pictures along with the words. She was just ignoring the pictures. And I was like, no, you can't do that.
One of the things that I think is, I'll get scientific with you here for a sec, and that is that comics are the only form of entertainment that works both on the right brain and the left brain. It's cognitive and interpretive simultaneously. And so for those people who just read the words, they miss a lot of the experience, because comic storytelling is about the combination of words and pictures. And then there are some people I hear who buy comics just for the art and just look at the pictures. Well, then they're missing the details of the lives of their favorite characters, and the actual stories that go with them. So I really think that if you look at comics as an educational tool, the great thing about comics is that they sort of bridge the gap between the way we used to be taught, which was pages and pages of text after text, and today's culture, which is so drenched visually. I mean, we are just soaked in all kinds of visual images. We're assaulted by visual images all the time. But more kids, I think, are visual learners now than ever have been before. So comics are a great bridge between that text and visual learning experience.
Do you still find an occasional teacher still resistant to the comic format?
Oh, yeah, but fewer now than ever before.
They're dying off? No. <Yeah. laughs> One of the things, I'm into the Japanese manga as well, and my kids are definitely more into the Japanese market, especially my daughter. Do you see us as an industry in America trying to change a lot to try to draw back the female audience? And
well, I think that's more of a question for about 10 years ago, and I'll tell you why. When manga was huge and there were, you know, long aisles of manga in all the Barnes and Nobles and Borders, before Borders went out of business and Barnes and Noble really changed the way they do things, what we had was a lot of people who would go into those stores, camp out on the floor, and read all the manga without buying it. That manga was sent back to the publishers because it was returnable, and the publishers were left holding the dime. But what happened then, to a large degree, is it created a generation of people who grew up with that style, with a Japanese manga style. And that, I mean, there are many styles within manga, but I think you see that influence now all across the comic spectrum. And what you're seeing also is a lot of the girls who came into manga 10 and 15 years ago are now coming into their own as artists and writers of comics. So they're bringing other girls and women into comics readers. And so I think we're at a point now where we are just now starting to really see the explosive growth of bringing the female segment of the population into comics. And I think that's a really great thing.
Okay, I didn't realize there'd been I knew it was slowly growing, but that's good to hear that you're seeing a much larger experience in your area.
Well, I'll go back one more, Richard. It's like you talked very early in the introduction about me winning the Friends of Lulu Award, right, in 2003. Well, that was for Free Comic Book Day. The reason I won it was because of the institution of Free Comic Book Day. But what the Friends of Lulu understood about that was that we weren't making up this holiday, this event, just to bring in diehard superhero boy fans into the stores. This was a way to universalize comics and make them accessible for everyone. So I think the Friends of Lulu recognized that and saw that how many more girls and women are now a part of the comics scene. And so I think Friends of Lulu was a little bit of ahead of their time in terms of that award, but it's appreciated nonetheless.
And it seems like the industry, I don't know how evenly split it is or what the percentage is, but the strong female characters, there are several now where there used to be just a few. So that's kind of nice to see as well.
Yes, it is.
Do you ever see a Wonder Woman movie?
Huh. God, I hope so.
Wonder Woman movie? It'd be nice.
Well, you see all the male superheroes,
right,
in a lot of the movies. You're seeing a little bit of Black Widow, you know, mixed kind of with the other ones. Just that's the only one I could think of off the top of my head, female superhero.
Well, you know, and the thing is, Wonder Woman was created to be a role model for girls back then. The creator of Wonder Woman was a psychologist. He was somebody who was very conscious about what he was doing at the time, creating Wonder Woman, because he saw that boys had all kinds of role models in the comics, from Superman to Captain America and all of that, and that there really wasn't anything that was that attractive to a young female audience. Now, a lot of fanboys love Wonder Woman, and you know, yes, there are a lot of girls and women who read Wonder Woman too. But I think they kind of moved away a little bit from what the original intended purpose of Wonder Woman was, and that was to actually be a role model for females.
Well, I think isn't Marvel in talks with Scarlett Johansson for a Black Widow movie?
Yeah, which may happen before a Wonder Woman solo movie. Even though Wonder Woman is going to be in the Batman Superman movie, but
ooh,
yeah,
I didn't know that.
And I don't know if it's maybe because she's more of a down to earth type lady, where Wonder Woman's a projected image. You know, kind of like, are you understand what I'm trying to say?
Well, I think what it is, the Wonder Woman origin story, which has changed several times over the years, is a really difficult origin story to sell on a movie. You know, in comics, give it to me in 3 pages and we can move on to the story. But the necessity in movies to dwell on what the origins are and try to make that a part of who the character is going forward makes that a pretty difficult thing. It's like, you know, you do all the Amazon stuff and the Greek mythology stuff that's a part of Wonder Woman, it becomes pretty confusing and does not necessarily speak to the character she is in modern times. So, you know, Thor still goes back to Asgard, but you plant Wonder Woman into New York City or whatever, and there's something there's a disconnect between what the original origin story was and what they're doing with her now.
Should we start a Batman versus Superman debate?
Well, if April was here, Batman would win all the time.
I will tell you that I'll tell you the answer to that one. If the battle happens at night, Batman wins. If it happens during the daytime, Superman wins.
There you go. My son says that Batman would always win.
And then my other answer is, who would win between Superman and Batman? DC Entertainment.
Yes.
True.
Depends on who's holding the kryptonite.
Exactly.
That's what he said. True. One of the unique things about your store there is you have a research library within the store that you offer to your patrons. Can you explain how that works?
Yeah, well, for anybody who's doing school projects or whatever and wants to research the history of comics, we have a lot of books that are available. I'm also, you know, somewhat of an expert when it comes to comics history, although I don't know nearly as much as a lot of other people. It's acquired knowledge over the years, but I've worked with a lot of school age kids, you know, whether it's elementary or middle school or high school or even college, to work on research papers. And because there's so much interest in comics, I figured it was a good way to make myself available to them to help, but also make the resources that I have available. So we have I don't know, behind me somewhere, if I move the camera here, I don't know. There's a bookcase behind me here that has a lot of comics history books in it, and that's our research library for doing projects and whatnot.
So if somebody, like I did research papers throughout my college career on comic books when my professors found out I had that niche. And if there's something that I couldn't find anywhere, could a student today get on Facebook or email the store and see if you could help them with some item if need be? Or do you even do that? Or it's just local?
It's pretty much what we do is for those who come in store. It's not anything we do via mail order or any of that sort of thing. But I'm always willing to do email interviews with people on the subject of comics. I get asked to do a lot of interviews all year long, so I'm always happy to help there. But when it comes to actually lending out from the research library. That's a much more local thing.
Okay. And since you're kind of getting into the library end of that with that library within your store, where do you see the libraries and the relationship with comic books and the industry as a whole moving forward? Can we expect maybe a little bit more interaction with the industry, or is it going to probably be about the same?
I think it really depends on individual comic retailers and then individual libraries. There are some libraries that seem to have a whole lot more going on in the graphic novel and comic zone than other libraries do. And we find that those are the branches of the library that will reach out to us for our expertise about what to bring in, what to add to their collections, what's popular, and what's gonna get circulated once it comes into the library. I do events with libraries, they'll call me in as a speaker for different events. I have one coming up the Monday before Free Comic Book Day. I'll be going to the local branch of the county library, and we will be talking all kinds of different complicated things. So I really think that it's more of an individual library to retailer kind of relationship. It's not we can put sort of a universal broad stroke on.
With one of the future items, of course, since I'm in the industry, I'm really interested in this, and since you have the ear of Diamond to a degree, the advertisements they sent out to the stores, do we have to work with you to get some of those, or can we order those from them? Because those, like occasionally my store will send out bookmarks, but not all the time. But even the little checklists that are postcard size, that's always something we could put in a book to always draw back attention to our collection plus comic industry as a whole. Do you know how that works?
The way it works is that there are a fair number of libraries that actually buy directly from Diamond or buy from Diamond through their local comic retailer. And if they buy directly through Diamond, then Diamond can set them up with some of those promotional materials. If they buy through their local retailer, the local retailer can get those promotional materials for them.
Okay, so I'm going to have to talk to my retailer, sounds like. Because I know they send them occasionally, but not all the time.
They do occasionally, the comics business is a little bit odd in that promotional material often costs the retailer something. Right. We don't necessarily get that stuff for free to give away. So there are occasions when we will get, 100 postcards from Marvel to promote the new release of Amazing Spider-Man number one the next crossover series.
Right.
Okay. But if we want to buy more of those postcards or bookmarks or whatever, then there's a charge per 100.
Okay, so if a library is interested, expect to have a little bit of surcharge, and we do that with the free comics. We actually pay for them too, so we're aware of that situation with my library. But for any libraries that are interested in getting started, that's a good note to put in their notes when they're taking them. The other thing related to the libraries is there's a presence at the American Library Association's conferences for publishers or Diamond itself or whomever might be there. A lot of the smaller libraries where these might go over, if they have an avenue to connect with, can't reach the ALA level conferences. Is there any plans maybe in the future to try to start hitting some of the local state conferences so that, some of the medium and smaller sized libraries have an opportunity to visit with the publishers or like Diamond itself?
I think to a degree some of that's already being done, but I do think that the resources of the individual publishers and Diamond are a little bit strained in terms of being able to get to all of the different conferences. Even within the comics field, all the publishers and Diamond don't go to all the comic book conventions. And within the library realm, there are a lot of either state conferences or California has, I think, two or three different subsets of the ALA. They have the Northern California Libraries Association. They have one for Central California, one for Southern California. So there are only so many places that representatives from the publishers and Diamond can go. But what they will also try to do is have their products represented through other other means, whether that's a Random House that might deal with one publisher, or Macmillan might deal with another publisher. There are different large book houses that do attend most of the library conferences that have some connection to the comics field.
Okay, because one of the things I've always asked before I go, because we don't have a very big comic book presence in our state conference, and I always email out trying to get even just flyers or bookmarks and stuff to give to the librarians to take back to the library, and even that's been a little difficult, and I understand budgets and everything like you said, but...
Well, the American Library Association also does some of the bookmarks and posters that are comics related, right. And there's a charge there, but a lot of that stuff is well worth bringing in.
Okay, and we kind of mentioned the movies. Do you see this as, you said you've seen an increase in people coming through? Is that becoming, do you have the people in your store that are kind of like the comic Nazis compared to all these moviegoers coming in just for the first time? And are they gelling well, or is there some conflicts at times?
Oh, no. We're always happy to guide anyone through the process. My goal is that anytime somebody comes in the store and we're able to find them something they like, I want them to leave happy so that they'll be looking forward to the next time they come to the shop. And the only way that's going to happen is if we are giving them good recommendations, guiding them in ways that are feeding them good entertainment, and that they're enjoying the stuff that they buy. So when people come in from the movies or TV shows, like a ton of people coming in from Walking Dead, well, they have to realize that Walking Dead comics are different than the Walking Dead TV show, that some of the characters are the same, but they go in different directions and will do different things. They're two different experiences, and I think that's a really cool benefit there, is that you can watch the Walking Dead TV show and get one experience, and you can read the Walking Dead comics and graphic novels and get a fuller, longer, wider experience there. So I think that's the case for pretty much any of the media sensations. And there are people who come in based off of, you know, the Arkham Origins video game, for instance, and they want to read some Batman stuff. Hey, that's easy. We can recommend some of the best Batman stuff for them, and it'll enhance their game experience. But our goal is keep people happy with what they're reading, and they'll keep coming back week after week.
And we kind of mentioned this a little bit in the first part of the visit, and I'm kind of going to tie it back in here, the digital age, and you were kind enough to develop a Skype account for us since we're a completely digital studio. But what are your thoughts on the digital age in comics? And you kind of mentioned, you know, prints here, it's never going to die, which I'm taking that stance as well. But do you see digital becoming even, or?
Well, here's the deal, is that everybody when things started to happen a few years ago with digital, everyone thought that's the end of print. Oh my goodness, our business is going to be gone. And what have we seen? We've seen comic sales continue to go up over the last few years. So to that end, I think that digital is probably a pretty good sampling device for people who want to read comics. But I think when people get into comics, they're going to want the real thing and want the full experience of having a book in their hand. And that's how our experience has shown us things are going. Second thing is that we haven't seen anything from any of the digital companies tells us that millions and millions of copies are actually being bought online. What we get is counts about views or downloads or things like that, but we don't get sales figures. For print comics, sales figures are splattered all over the internet all the time, but on digital they're not. They're kept very quiet. And my way of thinking on this is that the reason we're not getting solid dollar numbers on digital sales is that they're not really good enough to talk about right now. And that when there's finally a huge breakthrough that sells, you know, millions of copies that are actually sold for real dough, not downloads that are free, We're gonna start hearing about it. But until then, I see digital as a really good sampling device for people who want to get into comics. But I also see it in another way, and an important way, and the way that I think digital best serves the comics market, and that is digital goes into areas that don't have comic book stores. And what some of the publishers have told us over the last few years is that something around 50% or so of the people who are regular digital comic readers are those who are outside of the United States or outside of North America, because there aren't that many comic book stores in other parts of the world. So we're sort of exporting our culture, our comics culture, to the rest of the world. And digital is the way that's happening.
And the other aspect with digital, which I think on your website you mentioned a little bit, but for new artists or authors coming into it, the web comics are a great avenue for them to get into the industry. And
well, 15 years ago we used to that anybody could get into comics if they had it. If they had a Kinko's Coffee Center near them, you know, that all you had to do was draw your comics and go to Kinko's and print them up and you could start passing them out. Well, now Kinko's has morphed into the internet. You can do a comics blog and put your comics up there every week or every day, however you see fit, and try to get some eyeballs on those comics in order to sort of build up awareness and build a following. But I the idea is to keep on doing them so that as an artist or a writer, you keep on improving. The more you do something, the better you should get at it. And the comics market is very, very competitive, but it's also incredibly wide open, that if you choose to get into it, not to make money, but just to get your stories and ideas out there, anyone can be a part of that. Anyone can do that.
You know,
go
ahead.
But if you're into it thinking that you're going to be making big bucks on comics, then I would say maybe go to medical school.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, one of the best examples that I can think of how you were saying online comics are kind of, you know, just coming into being or whatever. There's a comic that I follow called Pridwin. And I can't remember who that's by at the moment.
Sofa Wolf Press puts that out in the print form, but I can't remember the author.
Anyway, I follow that one, and it's in blog format. They put out just a couple, 3 cells every day.
Absolutely. Well, and you have a phenomenally successful cartoonist like Jeff Smith, who did the Bone series and then Razzle after that. And Bone is there's something like 10 million copies of those books in print right now. It's in every library that. He does a series online now that people are following, and I think that's cool. It's a way for him to keep working, to get the stuff out there, and then when he has enough to put it into a book form, he'll do that.
Well, I think we've kind of taken up a lot of your time, and we appreciate you doing that for us, Joe. One of the things we asked of our guests, if they're willing, is to do bumpers for us. Would you be willing to do that? You're an old radio personality, so you kind of know what that is.
It all started at a 5,000-watt radio station in Stockton, California.
There you go. But we thought if you want to just mention your name and the founder of Free Comic Book Day and you are listening to Comic Pop Library, something like that would be nice to...
Okay, give me the name of the thing again, Comic Library?
Comic Pop Library.
Comic Pop Library, okay.
But we so just...
You want to count me down or something?
Yep, I will do that for you. And in 3, 2...
Hi, this is Joe Field, the founder of Free Comic Book Day, and you are viewing the Comic Pop Library.
I wish we were viewing, but it's listening.
Okay. That's okay. Okay.
We don't have enough web. Okay. We don't have enough oomph to do video.
Okay. All right.
So if you wouldn't mind doing that again, do listening.
All right. And we'll
do it again and in 3, 2.
Hi, this is Joe Field, the founder of Free Comic Book Day and Flying Colors Comics in Concord, California, and you are listening to the Comic Pop Library.
Thank you, sir. Do appreciate it.
Got it.
We definitely enjoyed visiting with you. And like I said, when I get talking comics, I can go on forever. So I could be here for another hour or 2 hours and still going. But one of the things we do and with our podcast is we're interested in the smaller presses. So if you happen to, I noticed you had a upcoming writer artist coming to your store pretty soon to do an event. If you know anybody like that that might be interested in getting in touch with us and letting us review for them and getting them some extra publicity, and we'd be glad to do that for them.
What, to do an interview and or what? Or
we do a review and an interview as well.
Okay.
That way they can get two shows out of one product. And we like to keep in touch with guests as well, so periodically, even if you have something that's going on and you would like to contact us and tell the library world about what's happening, we'd be glad to have you back on and do the do another segment. But we definitely appreciate your time today.
I got a question since you're a salesperson. Hey, I've got the Avengers and Amazing Spider-Man. Who would be the next logical comic to get into?
What, of those omnibus editions?
Yeah,
get the Fantastic Four.
Okay.
Now, and I'd almost say get volume two rather than volume one, but you know, volume one has some really, really goofy stuff to begin with, and like most of the early Marvels, but once you get into issue like over issue 35, then it just really starts to take off, and some of the best comics of that age were like FF40. Like issue 44 to 80 is some of the all-time best stuff. It's Jack Kirby and Stan Lee at their finest.
Excellent. Thank you.
And actually here's the cool deal is, you know, you can't see it, but right up here I have I own the original art to the first page of Fantastic Four I ever read, which was that page, that Fantastic Four number 65, when I had a broken arm. Somehow, through total serendipity, somebody brought this in to sell to me. And so I own the splash page to that issue. And it's, I've been told it's one of the five best Jack Kirby Fantastic Four splash pages.
That's one area I haven't gotten too much into yet, is original art. That's kind of,
I had to sort of turn off my fan instincts about acquiring old comics, because I want to make sure that the people who come in the store get what they want, and so I couldn't be in competition with them. But we don't sell original art, so that's what I started to do.
Okay. Well, the way I got into the comics is, I've told this story before too, is in the sixth grade, I was not reading, and my mother was banging her head against the wall trying to figure out how to get me to read, so she started buying me Batman and Aquaman comic books.
Nice.
So I'm a DC child because of that, and now I'm a director of a library, so you can
Aquaman?
See... Aquaman, yeah.
Worst superhero ever.
Not to me. Now, come on, guys.
Mine was when...
Where's your inflatable seahorse?
Well, I popped that in the bathtub, I'm afraid.
Yep. Thinking way back, my mom bought me the Sesame Street books, which I don't remember. I saw them in our friends at the library book sale at one time. I should have grabbed a couple of them, but they're a hardbound book, but on the inside of it, they were drawn and bubbled and everything.
Huh. Okay.
That was my first comic experience, I guess, if you want to consider them a comic.
The first TV comic experience, I guess, would have been, if you remember this, you probably do, Joe, the Electric Company, when they had Spider-Man on that.
Oh, yeah.
So that would kind of give you my age to you.
They were called Spidey Super Stories.
Yep.
I remember those.
So, well, it's been fun, Joe.
Good talking with you guys.
We'll talk to you later. Have a good one.
Okay, thanks.
For more information on Free Comic Book Day, go to freecomicbookday.com. If you want to find the nearest comic book retailer to help your library set up a program for Free Comic Book Day, or if you just want to attend Free Comic Book Day on your own, go to their website. On the left-hand column on their website is a search box called Find a Participating Store. Type in your zip code, and it will direct you to your nearest comic book retailer. Also, If you live or are visiting in the Concord, California area, be sure to stop by and visit Joe's store, Flying Color Comics, at 2980 Trent Boulevard at Oak Grove Road. If you aren't in the area and still want to see what Joe's store looks like, you can visit their website at flyingcolorscomics.com to take a virtual tour, and also be sure to check out Joe's YouTube channel, Flyco Joe. There you will find videos from Joe and the store.
My heart aches and keeps me wide awake. I can be your hero. You're my North Star, the strings on my guitar. You are there to turn to. The universe was brewing us over spring. Sleep again. I know I'll go far, and I know I'll make it right tonight. Tonight.
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any publisher, distributor, or studio, and it is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show hosts are their own and are not reflective in any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.